Welcome to Coffee, Culture, and the Capital with Sophia and Greg.
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back. We have so much to talk to you all today, from secrets, secret groups being hidden from parents at schools in a California school district in Northern California, to a California legislator or multiple legislators working to erase women, what's new, to some update on the parent notification policy that we've been talking to you guys about for feels like years now, but maybe 6 or 7 months now we've been talking to you all about that. And then a great thing is we have not just here to tell you guys about the bad bills, the crazy secrets, things going on. We have three really great bills that California Family Council is heavily supporting to tell you all about today. But that means you gotta watch or listen all the way to the end to hear about those bills, because we're gonna dive into all the other stuff first. But Greg, what is happening in Elk Grove?
Elk Grove, does anybody even know where Elk Grove is? Elk Grove is a place where actually I live. And it's about 15 miles south of Sacramento, just a nice little suburb, you know, where it's actually a very big school district. They got about 60,000 kids in it, which is quite big. And I've been involved with some parents who've been complaining over the last year about pornography being put into their schools. And they've been going down the school board, talking about it, trying to get the legislator, the school board members to pay attention. But something else happened just recently. You know, we get calls on occasion, anonymous calls saying, hey, do you know about this? And so we got a call from a teacher in another school district and said that there was some big controversy in a Elk Grove elementary school. Parents are up in arms about a secret LGBTQ club that had started, and parents weren't told about it. And so what happened, after I called some sources and got some information, and they sent me actual emails from the principal they were receiving, I wanted to make sure I got all my facts straight before we started talking about this. But what happened was, there was a third grade teacher named Daniel Bishop, and he wanted to start an LGBTQ club in his elementary school. He's a third grade teacher. And so he went around with the pride flag to all the third, fourth, and fifth grade classrooms. And he said, hey, I'm starting this brand new club. And this club is for boys who crush on boys and girls who crush on girls, right? So same-sex attraction in third grade, right? I'm not sure how many little kids are thinking that way, but and then he said, but you know, anybody could come. We're going to have great, cool games, and it'll be a great place of inclusion and love, right? And so kids, of course, started talking about this, not just the third graders, but everybody in the whole school started talking about it. And they went home and they told their mom, hey, mom, there's this brand new club and about boys who crush on boys. And like the mom was like, I didn't hear about this club. Right. I mean, this one particular mother I talk with, you know, her son was part of the gardening club, and the gardening club didn't have had to have a permission slip. Right. And so parents got upset. A bunch of them wanted to talk to the principal, and the principal had kind of an emergency meeting. 30 parents showed up at noon in the middle of the day, you know, just word of mouth. A district employee was there at the meeting, and they more or less found out that, yes, this club had started, and that they weren't quite sure that parents needed to be notified, because kids have privacy rights, right? That's what the Department of Ed tells schools, that kids have privacy rights from their own parents. And they found out that, you know, this isn't the only school with a LGBTQ club, which they call UBU, right? A UBU club. There were 5 to 10 other elementary schools where these clubs in elementary school had already started. And so anyway, so that was the impetus. That happened like at the end of January, and they were supposed to get back with them, answer some of their questions, you know, They never did. And so the parents said, you know what, we're going to the school board and we're going to let the world know what's happening. And that's what they did this last week. And one of the videos you're about to see actually hit what was the Libs on TikTok, which is kind of a pretty famous, well-known social media site. And I looked this morning and it had 3.3 million views and it was just released yesterday. So why don't we show that along with the testimony I gave, and then we can talk about a little more afterwards.
Perfect. Well, here's the one that was on the Libs of TikTok.
Thank you. As today is Trans Day of Visibility, I thought it was appropriate to present to the board and make public that the district recently sent this flyer, which I can provide to you, to all teachers, inviting them to a training titled Responding to Resistance. The bullet points mention that teachers will learn, quote, how to respond to resistance against rainbow clubs. Now, the discovery of this flyer was made known to us by an elementary school teacher, and it is quite alarming. It was sent just a few weeks after parents discovered a secretive lunchtime UBU club at Pleasant Grove Elementary School. Oddly, the district has not given much response to the concerned parents, but shortly after the incident, sent this flyer out to all teachers. It seems that the district's response to rightfully concerned parents of elementary age children is to ignore them and then provide teachers with training on how to push back, ignore, and keep more secrets from parents. This is blatantly disrespectful to parents who deserve to be partners in their child's education.
Right. So that's, her name is Heidi Moore. She's a parent, got like four kids. And she's talking about a flyer that I actually got a hold of and gave to her that was sent to, it was actually sent to all the elementary school principals. And it's right here. I know you can't see it on, if you're listening on a podcast, but it's titled Responding to Resistance. And it says, a virtual training on advocating for our LGBTQ youth with Oakland Unified School District LGBTQ programming specialist, Shminin Evans. And I went to find out who this specialist was, right? And she's got a bio on her on the website and says that she is a public theologian and she's got several degrees in let's see, she has a, let me see where I thought I wrote it down where I could see it. It's not popping out here. But she has a degree in sexuality and gender studies from Berkeley and different places. And she, actually, this is her specialty, right? The school obviously expected there to be opposition to these clubs in elementary school. We're talking 8-year-olds. Like, how many 8-year-olds know that they're lesbians or gay or transgender, right? I mean, that's what the school assumes, that kids already know, already thinking about sex, sexual attraction, and now they're inviting them to a club that's secret to talk about sexuality. Now they won't say that. No, we're just talking about gender identity and sexual orientation. That's not sexual. Yeah, it is. Yes, it is.
It's like, so, if a teacher were to go to a class and say, hey, 8-year-olds, because that's what these third graders are, they're 8 or 9 years old. Hey, who wants to come join my club where we're going to talk about boys like girls and girls liking boys, and we're going to talk about them kissing and the feelings you feel when you like them and how to take them out on a date as an 8-year-old. Like, everyone would be like, are you kidding me? They're 8 years old. Like, 8-year-olds, third graders, they're running around on the playground and girls are saying, ew, boys have cooties, and boys are saying, ew, girls have cooties. And like, that's what it should be. Like, they're young, they're 8 years old. And so then to say, hey, come to this club so we can talk all about boys who like boys and girls who like girls. Like, that is sexual in its being. That is, it is a sexual concept that they are talking about. It's not saying, hey, come to this club and we're going to garden. Like you said, that gardening club. Come to this club and we're going to learn about history. Come to this club and we're going to do puzzles. It's an inherent sexually topic they're talking about with 8-year-olds. And any grown adult that wants to have a club with 8-year-olds where they are talking about inherently sexual topics, there's something wrong with that.
Yeah. I mean, there was a police officer who actually, one of the parents was a police officer and has a daughter at this school and said, you know, I've been police officer for 10 years. And when there are adults who want to the children to keep secrets from their parents, it doesn't turn out well, right? When a teacher or an adult tells a child to keep secrets from your parents, he said, that's grooming behavior.
Yep.
That's what bad people do when they want to do bad things to kids, right? So, yeah, that is exactly it. So, you know, I had a chance to stand up and try and say something, you know, and I know we have the next video, but I was just, my point was parental rights. And this school district needs to respect the religious values of the parents, and keeping secrets does not do either of those things. So,
yep. So let's check out what you had to say at the meeting.
My name is Greg Burt. I'm an Elk Grove parent and the vice president of the California Family Council. And I'm in here in solidarity with the parents of Pleasant Grove Elementary School. These parents are like the vast majority of parents in this room. They love their children. They want the best for them. And they believe that their home is the children's safe place. These parents also hate bullying. They believe that teachers and administrators should not tolerate bullying, no matter what motivates it or who it happens to. But these parents also believe that they have a fundamental constitutional right to direct the care, education, and upbringing of their children. They also believe that the school district is obligated to respect that right. That's why schools should never keep secrets from parents, especially in elementary school. If some here tonight think what happened in Pleasant Grove Elementary is an isolated event, they would be wrong. I have been following this very same secrecy behavior from school districts around the state. State educational officials have the mistaken belief that minors as young as 5 have privacy rights that schools are obligated to protect, even if that means keeping secrets and deceiving parents regarding the struggles their children are having with sexuality or gender identity. And as mentioned before, there was the Teachers Association has been putting on seminars for teachers for several years, instructing them how to start LGBT clubs without letting parents know. Two of these teachers got caught, and there was a lawsuit. The parent got $100,000 because her child was secretly transitioned. And let me finish with this. Just because you might disagree with what a parent believes, just because you might disagree with their religious faith, you are still obligated to respect the rights parents have to raise children with their own values.
Thank you. Your time is up.
That was great. I mean, to point out the fact that there's lawsuits going our way saying that parents shouldn't have secrets kept from them, saying that teachers shouldn't be lying to parents. And so it's not just us saying we just think this legally. It's what's going on legally. It's true that parents should be informed and secrets aren't going to be hidden from them about their children.
No, right. I mean, and just specifically, the case I was talking about happened in Spreckles Union School District in Monterey County. There were two teachers that they had a UBU club too. And they secretly transitioned, convinced one of their pupils in the class, a girl, that she was a boy. She transitioned at school. The parent did not know, found out like a year later, and she was very upset. They ended up calling CPS on her, and police showed up at her door, accused her of being abusive because she wasn't supportive of her transgender son, right? She ended up filing a lawsuit against the school district, and the school district settled for $100,000 because they violated her parental rights. And these two teachers who did this, they were actually secretly recorded at a California Teachers Union seminar teaching other teachers how to start secret LGBTQ clubs in elementary schools. And Abigail Schreier, who is an author, she actually put together a story on this and exposed what was happening, you know, and that's actually what caused part of the lawsuit because the secrecy was part of the plan. And so teachers around the state have been trained on how to start secret clubs. So this is not some isolated event. If you're listening to this and you think, well, that would never happen at my school. Well, think again, right? Because teachers are being trained on how to start them secretly. And they feel at this point, no obligation to let parents know that their kid is going to a club at school, and you have no idea exactly what videos they're watching, what curriculum they're reading, what books are being introduced to, what conversations that teacher is having with your child about their gender or their sexual orientation at the youngest and most impressionable of ages. That's what's most infuriating. You know how kids look up to their teachers when they're in elementary school, right? And the teacher tells them maybe they're gay or maybe they're a lesbian or, hey, maybe they're, you know, some variant of a gender that you've never heard of, right? What do you think the impact is going to be on that kid? He's going to be confused. He's going to come home and the parents are going to be flabbergasted of how in the world did this happen? Well, so parents are standing up and we're exposing it. And that's what needs to happen, right? If parents in mass showed up at their school and said, you know, we're moving we don't want our kid in the school. If you're going to do this, listen, schools would change. You are going to threaten their very existence if you say you're going to pull your kid out of the school. And if parents do it in mass, I'm telling you, they will get rid of the curriculum. They want to exist. I mean, they want to push this stuff. But more than that, they need their paycheck, right? So anyway.
All right. So next thing we got going on, AB 1810. This is a bill that California Family Council is currently in opposition to up at the Capitol. It is authored by Assemblymember Isaac Bryan. This bill, overall, it's a great bill. All it's saying is, hey, incarcerated women are going to have better access to menstrual products when they need them. Okay, we're fine with that. It also includes birth control, emergency contraception, things like that. Where we have our major opposition to it is the fact that in the bill language, every time the bill said woman or female, it was crossed out and switched to persons. And so it was removing that sex-specific language because persons don't menstruate, persons don't get pregnant. Only women can get pregnant, only women can menstruate. It's completely illogical that we have people in office that say men can menstruate, men can get pregnant. And they're not directly saying that. They're not saying, we believe men can menstruate, we believe men can get pregnant, but they're saying that there needs to be tampons for all persons, that there needs to be birth control for all persons. And so a lot of people might say, but overall, it's a really great bill. So you're really going to oppose it because of that language change. Absolutely. This is being done on purpose. They're changing the language in these really great bills because then they might get people to ignore the language change just because it's a good bill. But if we start removing language, if we start getting rid of all our sex-specific words and language at the law, it's the whole part of this game plan to erase the fact that there's male and there's female. First of all, it's common sense that there's male and female and there's not another sex, that you can't switch your sex. Second of all, not is it just common sense, it's biologically proven there is male and there is female. There is not a third sex. Third of all, being a Christian organization, we know that God created us male and female perfectly in his image, and he didn't make a mistake making us. We weren't born in the wrong body. So you can argue it from an atheist point of view. You can argue it from a scientist point of view. You can argue it from a Christian point of view. All these points of views, It's common sense, male and female. That's being erased, and we got to push back. Otherwise, 10 years from now, we're going to wonder, why is there no sex-specific languages? There's no bathrooms for women anymore or males anymore because they slowly do this. So, because if they just came out of nowhere and did this all at once, everyone would push back, but they slowly do it. So if they can change the language slowly and get people on board with it, that's how they're trying to make this difference. So this bill had its first hearing, I think 2 weeks ago now, Greg, huh? And on the committee that it was in, there was 8 assembly members, 6 Democrats, 2 Republicans. All of them voted yes on this bill. So we went and testified, and so I'll just show you guys what I had to say when I testified, and then we can chat more about that.
Oh, and if men menstruate, I'm intrigued. Where does the tampon go? My name is Sophia Lori, and I'm with California Family Council. AB 1810 seems to be a positive bill at first glance. How can anyone be against making sure incarcerated women have better access to menstrual products? Yet, this bill replaces all mentions of females and women with the word person, ultimately erasing women and pushing an ideology that men can menstruate or men can give birth. AB 1810 disregards the inherent dignity of women by attempting to obscure obvious biological distinctions between males and females. This bill allows for birth control and menstrual products to be available to all persons. So let's walk through basic biology. Does a man have a uterus? No. Does a man have a cervix? No. Does a man have a vagina? No. Thus, males do not have a menstrual cycle and males cannot get pregnant. Let me repeat that. Males do not and cannot have a menstrual cycle or get pregnant. It is truly incomprehensible that today we have elected officials who lack an understanding of basic reproductive biology, that men cannot become pregnant or menstruate. Also, why would women need access to birth control in a female-only prison? We know through basic common sense, proven by science, it takes one man and one woman for a woman to become pregnant. This acknowledges the ugly reality that due to Senator Wiener's SB 132 from 2020, incarcerated men are allowed into women's prisons and women are being raped and forced into cells with men, 33.8% of which are registered sex offenders. I urge you all to vote no on AB 1810 unless this bill is amended to only provide birth control and menstrual products to actual women. To vote yes or abstain further advances the erasure of women and ignores basic biology. Oh, and if men menstruate, I'm intrigued. Where does the tampon go?
So here's the thing. No one's answered my question yet. I'm still wondering if men menstruate, where does the tampon go? The author didn't answer it. They just keep ignoring that.
Well, that was the crazy thing. I mean, I was watching the faces of the legislators, and they were like shell-shocked that you were saying this. I saw one of the Republican legislators with this. He was rubbing his face. He was just like, oh, no, don't say it. Don't say it. Right? And he said, oh, you're going to put me in such an uncomfortable position to be against this bill. Right? Now, I'm just interpreting what he was thinking. You know, but this is not the only bill that is doing this. There is another bill, SB 59, I believe, by Skinner, that's going to require that tampons and feminine products are available in female and male bathrooms in all our state buildings. And then last year, they approved a bill to require tampons be put in girls and boys' bathrooms down to the third grade. Down to the third grade. And it's, you know, this is part of, you think, oh, well, what's the big deal? Right. Well, the big deal is it's pushing this narrative that boys and girls, biology does not determine their gender. Therefore, boys can menstruate and girls can impregnate people. Right. It just so the words boy and girl are going to become meaningless in this system. Like it's what you know, they're more no longer nouns. They're actually adverbs or adjectives that describe your feelings, right? It's total nonsense, and we are have been putting up with it and just saying, well, you know, let them have what they want, you know. And now we're being forced to lie, you know, and now who's being harmed? Women in prison who have to bunk with a guy, right? In these tight spaces, they're being raped, they're being harmed. It's unconscionable, and it's unconscionable that these Republicans voted for it, mm-hmm. right? And they keep voting for these bills because they don't want to be, they're worried about some kind of commercial that's going to come out saying that they don't want, you know, menstrual products for women in prison, right? Yep. So anyway.
Yeah, it's beyond belief. And here's the thing. If the authors of these bills were being honest about the bills and they just said, yeah, we are going to provide these menstrual products for men, we're putting tampons in men's restrooms and state-owned buildings, all this stuff. Okay, at least they're being honest. But the SB 59, it had 2 or 3 committee hearings last year, and not once did she mention men. I was the only one that had to get up there and said, this is for men's restrooms. The authors don't mention it. Same for the author of this bill, AB 1810, Assemblymember Brian. As he did his opening statement, I think we went through and made a video, he said providing menstrual products and birth control for women in prison 8 times. He said incarcerated women. Okay, so you know it's a woman, like, but then your bill language doesn't, you don't want people to know that. We testify about it. He doesn't even say anything about what we said. He completely disregards what we say and goes to the point that he posts a great little clip on Twitter, a 25-second clip of his opening statement saying he's providing this, it's dignity for women in prison, and it looked like a great clip. So then I just commented my testimony and said, hey, here's also the truth. This is for men, and this is ridiculous, and you're erasing women. And now he's blocked me on Twitter. So that's where we're at with that. But that shows the legislators don't want the public to find out what is actually happening in the language of their bills. So sometimes when you see a great bill, think to yourself for a second, what does this bill actually do? What does the language actually say? There's a lot of bills. That's why we're here at California Family Council. We have our bill watch list on our website at californiafamily.org, where you can see we break down the bills. We write articles about them. We do these podcasts about them. All the different things to tell you what's really happening. So with that, we have 2 other quick little stories to chat with you all about, and then we're going to dive into those 3 great bills that we're supporting at the Capitol. But Greg, what is happening with the WPATH and their whole gender affirming care situation?
Yeah, if you know, we're going through a lot of stuff here. We're writing stories about this stuff every week. And mm-hmm. so we've got stories on our website on these bills we're talking about. So if you want more information, you want more details, you can always go to our website, look at our blog. So it's californiafamily.org. So we just published a story yesterday. WPATH, this is the World Professional Association of Transgender Health. This is like the organization that sets up the standards for the medical transitioning of minors and adults, right? And what they're trying to do is, hey, if somebody feels like the opposite sex, they can give you drugs, they can stop your puberty, and then they give you all kinds of surgeries to make you look like the opposite sex. Right. And this is all to treat people struggling with their gender identity or gender dysphoria. This is like, and so they've put together these medical standards. Right. So even at this at the legislature, when they start advocating for, and they call it gender affirming care. Right. But what they're really doing is gender confusion care. But the legislators stand behind this pseudo-scientific organization who's come up with these standards. Well, if you find out that there's an organization called Environmental Progress, they're a think tank, and they just released a bunch of files that they got a hold of from the organization that there is evidence that suggests that the guidelines shaping global transgender care do not align with medical ethics and evidence-based medicine. And they are exposing all the crazy experimental things they're doing, not getting consent from minors on a bunch of experiments. So it's quite the story and quite the scandal. And I'm glad somebody's finally exposing this organization for the fraud that they really are. So go look at the article. That's just one thing I wanted to point out. We got another article. The title of it is Christian public school teacher no longer has to keep secrets from parents or use preferred pronouns. I'm sure if you're here in California, you got businesses And if you work for the state, those state organizations are mandating that you use someone else. If somebody has a pronoun that isn't correct, that they refer to themselves as a female when you know they're really a male, they're saying you must say what the transgendered person says. Use their preferred pronoun. They're requiring you, making you say something you know to be false. Well, down in Escondido, California, there's an attorney down there, Dean Broyles with the National Center for Law and Policy. He actually went down there because there was a teacher down there because they have a secrecy policy. The secrecy policy says, hey, teachers are not allowed to tell parents if their kid has changed their pronoun and their gender at school. And she goes, as a Christian, I can't do that, right? And I'm also not going to use their little kid's preferred pronouns. That violates my religious faith. My religion says don't lie to kids. And so she went to Dean and said, can you help me? And he went to the school attorney and said, it's called a religious accommodation, right? A religious accommodation, and she got it. So that, what do you know what that means? You know, she got it because the Constitution guarantees freedom of religion. That means that the state cannot force you to violate your religious faith unless they got a really, really good reason. And the school districts don't have a really good reason. Neither do regular private companies. And so I please go and read that article and be encouraged. Don't lie at school. I mean, you shouldn't be ever being caving into lying just to make everybody happy anyway. So glad to see teachers standing up and using the law to protect themselves.
And I just want to add to that and kind of challenge you all, and especially if you are a Christian listening to this, when people start saying you need to use people's preferred pronouns, or maybe you need to put your pronouns in your email signage, in your bio, on your, if you have like a name tag and all that, and then you just think, you know what, it's not going to hurt anyone to use someone's preferred pronoun. It's maybe the more loving thing to do as a Christian. I just want to make one thing clear. As Christians, it's not loving to allow our neighbor to remain in sin. And so by adding pronouns to our own names, by using someone's preferred pronouns, it's not showing allyship in love, but it's showing allyship in sin. It's sin which prevents the truth from being told. And so when we think we are loving our neighbors by lying to them to affirm sin, and when we believe that's the right approach, we're foolish to believe that our false human methods of love could be more compassionate or loving or successful in spreading the gospel and spreading the truth about God than his own way, which is to spread the truth in love. So do not follow the culture, as culture is continually becoming depraved, anti-Christian. It's not even anti-Christian at this point. It's ignoring basic truth. Stop using these preferred pronouns. Stop falling for a lie that it is loving to lie to your neighbor. It is not loving to lie to them. It's not loving to them to tell them, to validate them that they were not created in the body that our sovereign God created them to be. So do not use preferred pronouns, especially as a Christian. I challenge you to stay far, far away from that and speak the truth in love to your neighbor and let them know that God created them perfectly as who they are. But that's just a little rant.
Amen. Amen. All right. I got some other good news. As you know, we've been working on parent notification policies this last year. We were rejected up here at the school board. Assemblyman Bill Asaley tried to introduce a bill mandating that schools simply notify parents if a kid has come out publicly at school and wants to use a different name and pronoun. And they didn't even want to hear the bill. So we went to school districts, and we had 10 school districts introduce policies that notify parents. If a child has publicly asked to be referred to as a different gender. All right. So one of those school districts was in Temecula, which is down south. And because of that policy, they got sued. Now, they got sued for two things. Because they also had a policy that says teachers in that district are not to teach critical race theory. And so based on both of those policies, they were sued. And the judge, came back just recently, and what they were asking for, we want you to put a halt on these policies immediately. And it's called an injunction. And the judge, a temporary injunction on the policy, the judge came back and refused to do so because he said that the likelihood of you winning your lawsuit here is not very good. And so this is great news. So I want to just go through this article because you think critical race theory, like what the heck is that? Well, the school district spelled out what they don't want teachers to teach as part of critical race theory, right? And here's what schools are not allowed to teach. They're not allowed to teach that only individuals classified as white people can be racist because only white people control society. So that's one thing they're not allowed to teach. They're not allowed also to teach that racism is ordinary, the usual way society does business. They're not allowed to teach an individual by virtue of his or her race or sex is inherently racist or sexist. And finally, that you can't teach an individual is inherently morally or otherwise superior to another individual because of race or sex. And you would think, well, yeah, if you taught any of those things, that's racism. But that is what critical race theory actually teaches. And so that is what the school district says you can't do. And the governor and everybody are flipping out. But of course, they mischaracterize it, saying that, you know, they can't talk about slavery or they can't talk about the history of America, which is false. Right. And so the judge said, you know, this is very reasonable for a local school district to prohibit that kind of teaching. And then he also said the notification policy, the proponent, the those who were against it, saying this policy discriminates against transgendered individuals. And the judge came back and says, no, it doesn't. It simply says that if a child asks for their records to be changed, their permanent records or their unofficial records to be changed regarding their name or their pronoun, then parents must be notified. That doesn't just apply to transgendered identified kids. It applies to any kid. And so he said, this is not discriminatory. So those are huge decisions. And we've had no response from Bonta, Attorney General Bonta, and we are on the winning side of this issue, and it was fabulous to see the courts now recognizing the authority local school boards have.
Amazing. And so we'll wrap up with three more good things, three more great bills. If you've been watching the podcast, I think we've been doing the podcast for officially over a year now. We started it in January of 2023. And we have had, I mean, we always leave it with a hopeful message. We always tell you guys ways you can push back and all that. But quite often, more than not, where you're the bearer of bad news, telling you the crazy stuff that is coming from the Capitol all the way down to school boards. But we have three really great bills to tell you all about. So, Greg, why don't we start off with SB 1368 by Senator Ochoabo?
Yeah, this is a bill that is actually going to talk about how great pregnancy care centers are. As you know, here in California, there are more pregnancy care centers, pro-life organizations that give women all kinds of free health care and help. And they provide support for them so they don't feel like abortion is their only option. Right. And there are more of these organizations than there are abortion clinics here in California. And that really, really rubs the liberal legislators at the California Capitol. They just every time they say it, you can see it. It really rubs them wrong. And that's why they're always attacking them, calling them fake clinics. And, you know, they're out to deceive women. So it is great. This particular bill, what it's going to do is, you know, here in California, every school district is required to teach sex education in public school, once in seventh grade and once in high school. And these classes already require teachers to tell the kids where the local abortion clinics are, right? And for the sake of equity and choice, which they're always talking about, right? This bill is going to require them also to, in these classes, to tell kids where pregnancy care centers are. And so this gives us a great opportunity to highlight the great work these pregnancy care centers do. They do great work. It's unfathomable that, you know, people don't know about them. Kids don't know about them. And so we're looking forward to promoting them, getting a great hearing. We're looking forward to a victory on this one. So,
absolutely. So that's a great one. Now we have one, SB 1219. This is also a great bill that we've been heavily supporting. Different topic than pregnancy resource centers, more on human trafficking. What is going on with this bill, Greg?
We know California is like a hub of sex trafficking in the whole country. It's really out of control. And it got even more out of control with a bill that passed a couple years ago. It was SB 327, which legalized loitering for prostitution. This particular law helped law enforcement deal with these red light districts in our cities where prostitutes are put out there by their pimps and men line up with their cars around the block to buy women on the street, almost like a, you know, an auction, right? And the bill said, you know, police can no longer ticket guys or ticket women who are out there obviously selling themselves for sex. And so what ends up happening is the only way you can stop it is if a police officer hears a guy and a prostitute exchange words saying, yes, I will pay this amount for these sexual acts. And if you can't do that, you can't prosecute anybody. Well, that makes open-air prostitution almost impossible to go after because police can't get close enough, right? But everybody knows what's happening, right? So as a result, street trafficking has exploded around the country. All these big cities, guys are lining up around the block, sometimes right in front of elementary schools, in residential neighborhoods, women being put out there practically naked all hours of the day with now pimps coming out of the shadows, right? And so it's an awful situation. So this particular bill is reestablishing the loitering, but it's particularly going after guys. And it says anybody who is impeding traffic in a public place, trying to buy a prostitute, it's going to be disorderly conduct, and the police can take your car and impound it. And so this is just one effort of trying to deal with these poor neighborhoods who've been inundated by human trafficking.
All right. And so you might be watching this and you're like, what was the bill number? I didn't write that down. What's going on? That was all like overwhelmed by all the stuff. Again, visit californiafamily.org. You will see our bill watch list at the top of our website. That's where we are breaking down all the bills we're watching. We're opposing or supporting the bill. We're going to put when hearing dates are. We put who the author is. You have the link to the actual bill. So check all that out. Stay up to date with californiafamily.org. You can also, if you go to our website, sign up for our newsletter where we send out information once a week, as well as follow our social media. There's tons of stuff there. But the last bill we're going to talk about, something that we are dealing with today that you didn't see, it wasn't an issue 10, 20 years ago, was porn is just through the roof right now. And what I think is really difficult for parents nowadays is 20, 30 years ago, if a child wanted access to pornographic material, they'd have to go to the newsstand or go to some bookstore, an adult bookstore, and purchase a magazine or something like that where they weren't allowed to as children. But now you see children literally at 5 years old with an iPad, 5 years old with an iPhone, and that doesn't mean they're necessarily watching porn, but they have access to it at their fingertips for free at any point without anyone even knowing. And so we want to support a bill that's going to make that a lot more difficult. So what is this going to do, Greg?
Well, this is it's not just happening here in California, but there is a movement around the country. 35 states have now introduced bills. They're called age verification bills on pornography websites. These are websites that are dedicated to providing pornography, right? And they target young people because they know if they can get young people addicted and trapped into watching porn when they're little, you know, they'll be clients for the rest of their lives. And so, but, you know, there are no real good ways to keep young people off pornographic websites. And that's exactly the way pornography websites like it. And so what's happening is these bills are being introduced about age verification websites where a third party organization is used to verify that a person is an adult. You have to have an ID. You have to have, they actually can tell even using they could take a picture of you and make sure that you look over at least an adult. And so this is being used in places already like Louisiana for other products that are sold online where age is an issue. Like in Louisiana, they sell online alcohol, and they got to make sure that the person buying the alcohol isn't a minor, right? And so they have age verification software to make sure that the person buying the alcohol is actually the person is an adult and not a minor. And so they do it for gambling as well. Europe is already way ahead of the United States in this issue. And so we are involved with a bill that will be introduced next week, hopefully. You'll get a bill number where age verification will be required of California's pornography websites. And so look forward to that.
Amazing. So again, that was a lot of information. Everything that we have talked about, there is either a story written on our website or it is on our bill watch list. So again, check out californiafamily.org. From there, you'll find all of our social media, such as our Instagram, where we post lots of updates. It's just California Family Council on Instagram, to being able to sign up on for our weekly newsletter via email on our website. And last but not least, there is a lot going on at the Capitol. There's a lot going on at school boards. There's a lot going on up and down the state, and we would not be able to push back and fight and research and keep you all informed without your support, whether it's your prayers to calling in with our call-in campaigns to your financial support. So we are here to be your voice at the Capitol. Help us continue to do that again by praying that we can be God's voice and light in this darkness, by supporting, by using our call-in campaign, by sharing our newsletter to people, to keeping people up to date with what's going on, and also by financial support. We are a nonprofit. We work fully off of donations. And so you can also donate at californiafamily.org. And then last but not least, we have our March for Life coming up Monday, April 22nd at the state capitol. It is a jam-packed day. If you visit californiafamily.org/marchforlife, you'll find all the information from praying outside of a Planned Parenthood to having a prayer and praise rally at the steps of the Capitol. I just think that's amazing to be able to be on the steps of the California Capitol, worshiping and praying to God. I just think that's a beautiful thing. To hearing from some amazing pro-life speakers from up and down California, as well as from across the nation, coming in to speak to you all, to Marching for Life, and then to lobbying to your legislators. So there's a ton going on. Again, visit californiafamily.org/marchforlife to learn more about the March for Life, or visit California Family Council on Instagram, and you'll see tagged or pinned at the top of our Instagram page is the March for Life schedule, all the information. But we would love to see you there all in person. But with that, we will see you all next time.
See you later.